Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
My name is Danielle Vogel, and you're listening to Everyday Enviro on Full Service Radio, a show about the little things you can do to minimize your personal carbon footprint. This show is all about empowering you to take control of the pace of environmental progress you're making just by being a little bit more mindful about the way you eat, drink, shop, and think. This isn't hard stuff, but we'll show you just how easy it can be when you know exactly which small things really do matter. On Everyday Enviro, we've talked a lot about making environmental progress by drinking well-sourced, locally brewed craft beer. But today, we're going to take it a step farther and talk about achieving ultra-locality by brewing your own beer at home. Today, I'm joined by cheesemonger, beer buyer, and home brewer Todd Himes, who also happens to be the director of purchasing at Glens Garden Market, which means he's responsible for cultivating our product mix and making sure you can always find the very best of what's around on our shelves. Todd, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
This is going to be so fun.
This is going to be great.
So, Todd, you're a busy guy. You buy all of our cheese, charcuterie, beer, wine, cider. You run our buying team at Glens. But today, we're actually going to focus on your extracurricular activity, homebrewing. So, how did you get started brewing at home, and what sort of inspired you to try it out?
Sure. I really wanted to get started by making something that I couldn't buy. It was just, you know, playing around and thinking about the beers that I wanted to drink and not being able to really find those. And it just was, it was a great creative outlet. I got started actually with a book that we actually sell at Glens. I used the Brooklyn Brew Shop little How to Brew, and started doing 1 gallon batches on my stovetop.
Nice. So actually, you know, it's old hat to you, but I've certainly never tried this. Can you walk us through it, soup to nuts, start to finish? How do you brew a batch of beer at home?
Sure. There's a couple different ways you can kind of get started. You can go really simple and use a kit and get extract, or you can go full grain, which is kind of a little more advanced, gives you a lot more opportunity to play around with your recipes. And the way that I started actually was just jumping right into this full grain or all grain mash. You are taking your grains, you are steeping them for about an hour or so at a certain temperature and extracting all the sugars out of that. Then you're going to boil that, you're going to do your hop additions. You will transfer that to a fermentation vessel. You'll pitch your yeast, and the magic then happens.
You used a lot of words that people that don't do this don't understand. All right. So first of all, where are you going to buy these ingredients? So you mentioned grains, you mentioned yeast, you mentioned hops. Where would a layman go to find those things?
Sure. There's a couple homebrew shops around in the area. There's one in particular, very well stocked. This is where I usually visit, is up in inside the tasting room at Three Stars up in Northwest DC. There's also a number of online different vendors that you can order from as well. But I got started there. I was in Maryland at the time. There's a great place up in Frederick, and there's a really awesome huge shop up in Columbia as well that I absolutely love going to.
Do you remember the names of any of those?
Oh yeah. Hold on. The one in Frederick is the Flying Barrel.
Excellent.
They're actually located in front of Monocacy Brewing, or at least they used to be when I lived up there. And then it's Maryland Homebrew in Columbia, which is gigantic and kind of in the center of like Columbia's kind of brewing scene. They've got a great beer bar down the road, two or three breweries within, like, you know, spitting distance, basically, from there as well.
So you also mentioned a fermentation vessel. How big is that? How much does it cost? What kind of investment are we talking about here?
I started with a 1 gallon, and that was actually a bottle that I bought at the homebrew store. But they, you know, if you are buying big old jugs of apple juice, you can just use those as long as you've got a stopper and an airlock. Those are kind of the more important ones. You can ferment in a bucket as long as it's sanitary. There's a lot of different options. You have some creativity for sure. You can ferment in, I imagine you could ferment in a balloon if you really wanted to, but you know.
That sounds fun.
Basically, it's going to be anything
that could possibly go wrong.
What could possibly go wrong?
Don't do this in your mother's kitchen.
And you're looking for something that is enclosed, able to be sanitized, and generally would have a hole to expel some of the gas.
Okay, so you do your steep, your boil, your ferment.
Yeah.
And then do you add carbonation at some point, or is that naturally occurring?
The naturally occurring carbonation, you can prime the... So that you get to the carbonation when you come to bottle it, usually. Those first batches I was doing, this is actually why I started doing larger ones, is those first ones, you have all the time, all of the cleanup, and you only get about 10 bottles out of it, which
we call a Thursday afternoon, right?
Or, you know, just recording this podcast.
Definitely.
But yeah, it wasn't a whole lot. It was enough to have a couple, share with some good friends. But that process was, yeah, a little bit more time consuming, a little bit messier, than I really wanted to be. But yeah, when you're carbonating for a bottle, you will naturally carbonate. So you'll bottle condition, you'll add a tiny bit of sugar. There's a little bit of yeast left working and doing its thing, and it'll carbonate again in the bottle. Much like the new pet nat kind of thing that's catching on with wines.
Oh my goodness, all the rage. Tell us more. What is pet nat?
Oh, petillant naturel. It's the sort of the same idea where you're taking a wine that is not completely carbonated and bottling it, letting it build up pressure and carbonation inside the bottle, and then it's got like a little bit of natural yeast that remains in there, can make it sometimes a little cloudy, sometimes a little funky. It's what all the cool kids are drinking these days.
You want to make sure to give it a real good shake before you open it up.
Oh yeah. Although, you know, so actually some people like to save that little cloudiness. Yeah, you can do a little pour at the end, almost like the nose on a bread. You know, you got to save it for most important person in the room.
So how long does the, sorry to return to no, beer no. for a second. So how long does the home brewing process take?
It's a couple hours of between the steeping, the boiling, say nothing of the cleanup. You're then giving yourself about a week usually to ferment, sometimes 2 weeks, sort of depends. And then when you bottle, you've got probably another week for that carbonation to build up as well.
And over the course of the week of fermentation, would you want to locate the beer somewhere in particular in your house? Does it respond to like humidity conditions, for instance? What's optimal?
You want to maintain a constant temperature. Your temperature will actually affect like the flavor of your fermentation as well. So some strains of yeast like to be very cold. Some strains handle being very, very warm. And that kind of is something you can factor into like the selection of what you want to pitch, which is the act of actually adding the yeast. There's like, you know, if you know that you don't have a spot that will maintain a constant temperature, you can still brew. You can still make like a saison or something like Belgian inspired that loves that heat, loves to get like a little bit, you know, ramped up and throws off, it'll throw off different flavors depending on how you're kind of stressing your yeast.
So speaking of different flavors,
yeah.
Hops, have you ever tried to grow your own? Can that even be done around here?
It can. I have not tried to grow my own. Well, I tried very disastrously once to grow one hop rhizome on my back porch. That did not turn out well. It can be done around here, and actually, Maryland, Virginia have a history of growing hops, and New York was the original sort of hop capital in the United States before the Pacific Northwest sort of took over. And so a friend of mine runs the Maryland Hop Growers Association, has a hop farm, commercial hop farm, and now a brewery up outside Frederick as well. So I have some good experience with him and a couple of other farmers working on their hop yards, harvesting, that sort of thing. Not too involved, but I've definitely not rolled up my sleeves, because that's, you don't want to do that. But you want long sleeves when you're out there. But yeah, I've definitely harvested some hops as well. It can be done.
So why did you kill yours?
Oh, I had no idea what to do with it. I am not particularly green in my thumbs.
Fair enough. You have many, many, many other strengths. So I head out to Telluride, Colorado for the Telluride Blues and Brews Festival every year, and I always look forward to trying some really like weird stuff. So I'm looking for the jalapeno beers. I'm looking for the super wild, weird yeast. Have you ever played around with strange, funky ingredients in your homebrews?
Yeah, actually, you mentioned jalapeno. Jalapeno, I made a jalapeno IPA once. Made it. It turned out really, really well, but I took the seeds out of the jalapeno because the pepper itself is actually kind of like nice and fruity and grassy, the flavors that, you know, you can look for in different types of hops. So really, really fun stuff to play around with. I think actually the favorite thing I've ever brewed, and I was actually talking with my wife about this last night, was this Imperial Stout that I did and then aged it on some blackberries and then pitched a wild yeast in as well, and it just got delicious and funky, and I'll never actually be able to recreate it, I think.
That sounds what would you, if you had to name that beer, what do you think you would have called it?
Oh, I think I actually did make a name for it.
Just pro tip, Todd's real good at this, so this is gonna be a fun game.
I can't remember what I...
Bollocks! The wind-up and we missed.
I know. I'm usually much more creative.
Great news. We've got a break coming up. We'll think about it. Wonderful. We'll come back stronger. So that sounds great, but just generally, what styles do you prefer to brew at home?
It's really easy to turn over like an IPA. That's generally what we've had on tap lately. My wife and I, she's also a big home brewer, which is great. We just did a mansplaining IPA. Well, actually, it's a pale ale. that one was a lot of fun. Kind of her idea for the name and everything. Making what is essentially a pale ale that gets called an IPA these days.
That's really funny. So for the rookie home brewer, are there any styles that are easier than others to get started with?
Yeah, the IPAs, the amber ales, pale ales, something a little in those kinds of lines. You can use some very forgiving yeast strains. They're not too complicated to brew. There's actually a lot of kits available for those as well if you want to get like started that way. I've also, you know, I had luck pretty early doing some nice stouts. You want something that generally has a little bit of flavor, because if you don't get it exactly right, there's maybe like a bunch of hops, or, you know, like something really roasty that kind of covers up any off flavors. Mm.
And do you have any tips for our first batch of homebrew?
Do something that you want to drink, because if you even 10 bottles, if you realize that you don't really like, you know, IPAs, now all of a sudden you've got 9 bottles of it after you've opened
one. You're probably not going to try another.
Yeah.
All right. That's good advice. Thank you, Todd. So we're talking with Todd Himes. He's a true Renaissance man, as you're discovering. We're talking about home brewing. We're going to take a short break, and when we get back, we will take some tips on buying great locally made beer around here. Back in a sec. Welcome back. This is Everyday Enviro, a show about the small things you can do to reduce your personal carbon footprint. I'm Danielle Vogel, founder of Glenn's Garden Market, and I'm joined today by the brilliant and extraordinarily talented Todd Himes. We've been talking home brewing, and now we're going to give you some tips about how you can find great locally made beer around here if you're not feeling motivated to brew your own at home. So, Todd, clearly you've cultivated an exceptional local beer program at Glenn's Garden Market, so that's always a good place to go to find great local beer on the shelves and on tap. But who else is doing a particularly good job putting together an interesting local beer set around here?
Sure. Retail-wise, I do a good bit of looking around. Definitely... Being at Glenn's, I love all of our local breweries, and occasionally I want to drink something from, like, North Carolina.
What?
I know. It's verboten.
Jacques.
I really like Odd Provisions up in Columbia Heights. They do a great job. They've got a funky little selection. Craft Beer Cellar gets stuff from all over the United States as well. I really, really enjoy, you know, trying different stuff out. I'm very partial to my old haunts as well. I'll drive across the bridge and check out Air Wine over in Arlington. They do an amazing job and also have all kinds of weird cheeses and stuff that I just don't get enough of. As far as bars go, I really, really like Free State down in around Chinatown. I miss Meridian Pint a lot.
Yeah, for sure. R.I.P. Or actually, you can drive across the river.
The river. And they've, you know, there's another, there's Smoke and Barrel right around the corner here. There's a Brookland Pint, so they're not, you know, completely gone. But Meridian was always awesome. It also helps that it's within walking distance of my house.
Yeah, certainly. I've also heard a lot about Birch and Barley.
Yeah, Birch and Barley and Church Key just run a fantastic job. That whole group actually does amazing. So any of their restaurants always have amazing beers, tons of stuff you can't get anywhere else. And Church Key is wonderful. My wife and I actually had our first date there.
Oh.
I think that, like, if I had to recommend one, though, I'd really go for, Church Key, they do it up. There's a whole, like, 55, you know, beers on tap and, like, hundreds and thousands of bottles even. I don't even know. They hand you a beer menu. It looks like a phone book. But I really like the little red apron that they've got down at Union Market. Mm. Like, there's always something really cool that I want to drink on down there, and they make a pretty good sandwich.
What about tasting rooms?
Tasting rooms, love Three Stars. Love what Hellbender is doing, the Right Proper Brew Pub, yeah. And their tasting room.
Their actually. Tasting room is just so awesome.
The last time I was up there, they had, you know, a couple things that they just kind of were messing around with. They'd done some one-off kegs. There was a champagne that was just weird and wonderful. I was completely surprised by a hibiscus and coffee Berliner Weiss that they had put together. And it was just, it was great to see that kind of experimentation, because it's like you've got a brewery that's already kind of pushing and doing like interesting different things, and then they've got these little like one-off, like you won't see this again, maybe, you know, that you can only find there, and it's just out of this world amazing good.
It's also just a cool looking room.
Oh, so for sure.
Thor had these like incredible murals commissioned that are sort of the fanciful, illogical extension of the thought, what if animals ruled the world? And it's like a little grotesque in some places and totally freaky, but a lot of fun. And I personally, you know, I drink a lot of Optimal Wit from Port City, but there aren't like a huge number of beer styles I love. So Right Proper is one of the only places I go where I really have trouble choosing what I want, because so many of their beers are just irresistible.
Yeah, they do a wide selection. Even going over to their brew pub over in Shaw, which has an amazing chicken sandwich, which, you know, some people may not enjoy anymore, but that's fine.
I have become a vegetarian in the last 48 hours. He's making fun of me. The small things matter, Todd.
They do. They do. But they, it's really cool because they will always have like something different. They even, you know, they had a New England IPA not too long ago that I was over there and drinking, and they're just, they're trying everything. That's kind of one of the important things. I love to go. There are some breweries that do one or two styles very well, but like the people that can do everything really awesome is great. I was actually it's not super local, but I was up in the brand new Union facility this weekend, and it was just, it was amazing. It was like a place I would love to spend more time at.
So this is right outside of Baltimore?
Right in Baltimore.
Oh, it's in the city.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Those are a lot of good tips. So where is the Right Proper tasting room? Right by the Brooklyn Metro, right?
Yep. Okay. Really cool. They've got great bike racks too, if you anybody wants to ride on over.
Very good. So as one of the premier beer buyers in town, you have deep insight into what our local breweries are up to. And since this show is all about making good choices that help the environment, can you tell us who's doing particularly great work from a sustainability perspective that we should seek out?
Sure. Start with where we just ended, with Right Proper. Up in their tasting room, they've got a whole like solar covering there. It's really, really cool to see. They're completely solar powered there. Atlas down over in Ivy City, also solar powered. It's right there on all their cans. You've got Hellbender up in Northwest, who do a really amazing job. They've got this mash system that I honestly don't even completely comprehend, but they are saying that it, like, they can use like way less water, and they're able to conserve. They're really dialed in on sustainability up there, and also making some great, great beers. Yeah. Those guys kind of stand out. There's, I'm blanking here.
I've got great news while you think.
Great.
All of those beers are available at Queens Garden Market, every single one you've named.
Absolutely.
So if you want to come taste around, we've got them all. And are there any new breweries that are either about to open or having just opened that we should be checking out?
One of the newest ones in DC, I really enjoy, Red Bear.
Whoop.
Love those guys. Beers have been excellent from there that I've tried. They've actually, the last time I was there and talking, they were having so many people coming out that they were actually having trouble keeping up with demand, which is never a bad problem to have, I think, when you're opening a new business.
Yes, I'm also a big lover of Red Bear, which was founded by Glenn's alum, Brian Vanderover. It's really, really exciting to see him thrive. And the beer is pretty good too.
The beer is pretty good. Brian, last time I saw him, was sporting quite the sporty mohawk as well.
That's so cool. So this is down by the Red Line, the Noma stop. It's just maybe a block and a half from the metro. Could not be easier to get to. It's in the building where REI is, just a stone's throw from Union Station, right off of New York Avenue. So if you're in that part of town, please go check it out. The guys are great. The beer is great. We are 100% behind Red Bear. All right. So finally, Todd, this is a show about small behavioral modifications we can make to reduce our personal carbon footprint. Any pro tips for how you've reduced your own personal environmental impact?
Ooh, actually, I'm gonna go back to the homebrewing part. It's really amazing the homebrew, the spent grains that are left over. They make excellent feed for your compost piles. We send ours out, but you know, if you were maintaining your own at home, it's a very important thing to do. The other stuff I do, I walk as much as I can.
Very good. Minimize your transportation emissions.
Always important. Recycle all those beer cans and bottles, for sure.
Final words from Todd. Recycle the beer after you drink. So thank you so much for being here today, Todd. I learned a ton. I'm feeling empowered to plan a trip to Odd Provisions, where I've never been. So I'd love to check that out. And I've also never been to the Three Stars tasting room. So we can sort of do a double header. We'll check out the tasting room and we'll stop by the brew shop to pick up some important elements for home brewing.
Yeah.
It'll be great. So it's going to be awesome and we'll drink some delicious beer. I'm looking forward to it. So before we end our time together, let's take a moment to reflect on why climate change is a problem worth even attempting to address at the personal level. It's huge and complex, and at times it seems well beyond our control, but it's not. This is your moment of motivation. This week, our data comes from the 2017 State of the Climate Report, which is an international peer-reviewed publication released each summer. It's the authoritative annual summary of the global climate. So here we go. This is not good. So the annual global average carbon dioxide concentration at Earth's surface for 2017 was 405 parts per million. This was the highest in the modern atmospheric measurement record, and ice core records dating back as far as 800,000 years. The global growth rate of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has nearly quadrupled since the early 1960s. And the four warmest years ever recorded have occurred since 2014. So mind you, this is a 2017 study saying the four warmest years on record occurred since 2014. So that is a consecutive trajectory that is not a good look. So the result of all of this, as we know too well, sea level rise, droughts, fires, ocean acidification, reef bleaching, unparalleled species extinction, changing migratory patterns, changing agricultural patterns. Climate change is real. It's happening right now, and human activity is making it worse. Guys, every little bit counts. Keep finding little ways to minimize your personal carbon footprint. It really matters, and it's urgently necessary. Thank you so much for being here today, Todd, and thank you for listening to Everyday Enviro on Full Service Radio. If you have an idea for a show or a guest, or you have a question about how you can reduce your personal carbon footprint, hit me up by email. I'm at glensmarket@gmail.com. We're going to take a 2-week break, but we'll be back later this month with many more pro tips for reducing your environmental impact. Talk then. Bye, friends.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO. On Instagram and Facebook @Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.